Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up on today's program, we'll talk with Rapid City writer Lori Armstrong about the hero of her latest mystery novel, Merciless. We'll also discuss the latest in state politics with the Dakota political junkies, John Hunter and Jonathan Ellis. And we'll have another conversation in our Maker series with women who have made a difference in the state. In just a few minutes, we'll talk with the first director of the State Arts Council, Charlotte Carver, and longtime and founding director of the Rapid City Arts Council, Ruth Brennan. And you're welcome to join the conversation. How have the arts affected your life? Are you a fan of Lori Armstrong's books? And do you have any comments on what's happening in the state legislature? I'm on Twitter at CarlSDPB, or you can email us at midday@sdpb.org. But first, SDPB Radio Statehouse reporter Victoria Wicks joins us from Pier for the latest news from the state legislature. Vicki, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl.
And what's happening this morning, or what has happened, if anything?
Well, this morning I went to a hearing I'm sorry, I'm getting an echo, and it's kind of
disconcerting.
Yeah. Yes, very much so. I went to House Judiciary this morning and heard changes in child support guidelines. And they have to be reviewed every 4 years under federal law. And so a couple of things were cleaned up, especially the language. There was very, presumption that the mother was the custodial parent and the father was not, and that sort of thing. And they cleaned that up to use gender-neutral terms. And then they changed the timelines in which people, fathers can be determined to be the biological father, because DNA technology was not reflected in current law. So previously there was a presumption that the father was the father, and that could be rebutted for 3 years, but not beyond that. And now it can be rebutted up until the child turns 18. So those are a couple of changes there. And then Lori Feiler with Corrections appeared to talk about giving gate money and transportation to inmates who are coming out of the penitentiary. Previously, law allowed only for them to get the first year, but or the first release, you know, and then if they went back in, they didn't get it a second time, but now they get it again, so they can return to wherever, you know, their home, as opposed to just being dumped in whatever town they happen to be in when they get out of the penitentiary.
So it sounds like a lot of just kind of cleaning things up, changing a few things here and there in these bills and this legislation.
Well, they are, yes. Tomorrow there are some interesting things coming up in Senate Judiciary. They discuss certain aspects of confidentiality of the person who manufactures the drug in lethal injections. And there is a witness who wanted to testify, and that person couldn't be there. So that person will show up tomorrow to testify. So that's going to be interesting to hear that testimony.
And that's part of the Attorney General's proposed legislation.
That is, yes. Okay. And then other aspects of his proposed legislation are coming up tomorrow also. One is to allow the prosecution to appeal from certain judgments of acquittal, including when a judge sets aside a jury verdict. Like if the jury comes back with a guilty verdict, and the judge can set that aside and acquit the defendant. And the Attorney General wants to appeal in those cases. And so that will be an interesting discussion. Establishing a – I'm not an attorney, so okay. I have to stop talking at some point on these things. And there's also establishing a penalty for a juvenile convicted of first or second-degree murder. South Dakota's sentencing scheme right now – provides a mandatory life sentence for somebody who is convicted of first or second degree murder. And the U.S. Supreme Court ruled just recently that juveniles are disadvantaged by the sentencing scheme because they're young, and so the judge really needs to listen to mitigating circumstances, mitigating evidence, before sentencing a juvenile to life. So now sentencing for a juvenile will be up to life if that child is tried as an adult for first or second degree murder, if the bill passes.
Okay. Well, you'll keep us updated on that, and then we'll talk with you tomorrow.
I will, and it's nice talking to you.
All right, thanks so much. That's SDPB Radio State House reporter Victoria Wicks, and she's providing legislative updates on Dakota Midday throughout the session. And coming up a little bit later this hour, we'll talk a little bit more about the legislature with the Dakota Political Junkies. In late February, PBS airs a special three-hour television documentary called Makers, Women Who Make America. The program explores women who have helped shape America over the past 50 years. And all this week on Dakota Midday, we're featuring women in South Dakota who've made a difference. In 1966, the state legislature passed a bill creating a state arts agency, and as the first executive director of the South Dakota Arts Council, Charlotte Carver laid the groundwork and established programs essentially out of nothing, and she served as executive director through 1988 and is considered the founding mother of the State Arts Council. She joins us now. Charlotte Carver, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday. Hello? Also with us is Ruth Brennan, who became the first executive director of the Rapid City Arts Council and the Dahl Art Center in 1975, and she served in that capacity for 23 years. She also chaired the South Dakota Arts Council Board from 1999 to 2004. Her admirers say that if something needs to get done in the arts, she's always there to make it happen. And Ruth Brennan, thanks for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Well, you're very welcome, Carl.
I don't know. Charlotte Carver, can you hear us?
I'm here.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday. Charlotte Carver, I'd like to begin with you. Can you take us back to 1967? What did it take to start the South Dakota Arts Council?
Well, first of all, let me thank you, Carl, for having this program focusing on the arts because of what you do in South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I want
you to know that you've been a very important, integral part of our growth in the arts because of your statewide programming, and I want you to know that we all appreciate it.
Well,
so then I can go on and tell you what you've done. You started before we did. You're a much older organization than we are. When we started in 66, we were pioneering in the field of programming, and you already had been running classical music for days and days and hours for years and years. But anyway, when the National Foundation for the Arts and Humanities decided that we should be spread the money on the arts statewide, everywhere in the nation should be honored with this money, and they gave $25,000 to see if any state wanted to establish an actual organization within state government. Nils Boll called together 15 artists and art supporters to peer, and they decided that, yes, it was a logical thing to do, and in that 1966 the legislation was created, which made us official, and it's been going ever since, and now almost to its 50th anniversary. Starting at the beginning, though, you wanted to know about the pioneering
state. Yes.
There was no way to know what you should do. This group got together. They didn't know each other, and they didn't know what an arts council was. There weren't any patterns. Nobody in the nation, well, New York had an arts council, but they were about the only ones, and that would have no relevancy to us. But anyway, so they decided what they had to do was they had to set up lines of communication, and that $25,000 had to be spent on something that would create an impact on the state. Well, there were six little symphony orchestras suffering to keep things going, and so they started to help with the importing players for the orchestras with one of the funding sources. I think $6,000 went toward that. Then they started a touring arts programming, and that's still in existence. And then they started small grants, mini-grants, they called them, to projects that people wanted to start in their own communities. So that's how the whole thing started back in 1966. And I can't even start to tell you how far it's come since then.
Did you have much direction in how you were forming the South Dakota Arts Council?
We had no direction, Carl.
You were just kind of...
There was no format. There was nobody had written a book on how you start an arts council. They had to start from scratch, and that meant that even the legislation written by the Senate had to be used. They had to learn the language of the arts business, which was a revelation to everybody. And they had to recognize what the needs were and where the people were that wanted them, and it was a major undertaking to determine what direction to take.
Well, Ruth Brennan, when you got started with as the executive director of the Rapid City Arts Council and the Dahl Arts Center, and that was what, about 9 years after the Arts Council got started. Did that foundation help you in your work?
Well, yes, it did, and actually, with the Arts Council out here, the Rapid City Arts Council, we got started because Charlotte came out and said, "There's some money here. Why don't you get something going?" And we had she called quite a few people together, and so they sat down and formed the Arts Council and started out with doing scheduled calendars and of festivals and that kind of thing. And we kept on with that until Art Dahl came to the group and said, "I'm going to build a building, and I want you to administer it." Well, and that got started, and the Dahl Arts Center was the result of those negotiations and all of that talk. So what that did here in Rapid City was to give the Arts Council, which is sort of a nebulous term, gave the Arts Council a visual place that people could actually go by and say, "That's where the arts are." And at that time, we had community theater, and we had nonprofit visual art gallery, and we had the Chamber Music Society, and
we had lots of artists.
Well, yeah, we had a lot of visual artists, but they
didn't know each other.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and so it really gave the whole arts community here for Rapid City and the Hills as well a place to be and a place to show their work and to perform and all of that. So it was a huge boost to the area. And, you know, time would have told what would have happened without the Arts Center, but it really gave a place for everybody.
Well, Charlotte Carver, is that one of the things that the Arts Council, the State Arts Council, helped do, was to foster an arts community where the various artists around the state had it helped unite or help them know that there were others in the state also working in the arts?
Well, that was part of the problem, Carl, is that there were these little pockets of arts activities. Sioux Falls had, and all college towns had, a lot of activities on campus, but did not have the community involvement that it needed to make them really prosper. So starting of the whole Community Arts Council movement started with that first group meeting in Rapid City where, what happened, Carl, was, yeah, I was located in Sioux Falls and set up the office here because this is where I was raising my family. And, but I realized immediately that the Black Hills was a pocket of arts activity, and that we had, and then it was Spearfish there, and then all in the Black Hills area, the artists all over the place. We knew we had to, we had to get the pier because we had to convince the legislature that we were worth the money they were spending. That's why it was interesting to hear the report from Pier today, brought back memories of the battles to keep that funding going.
in those early days, how hard was it to convince people that this Arts Council was something that was important?
It was very difficult. It was very difficult. There were always strong supporters, but there was a big pocket of the population that couldn't. Well, it took a real old representative like Ben Rifle, who spoke so wisely for us in saying that the arts were so important in communicating between people. And that was part of the problem, was that there was no communication. And so that's why the network was established. And now we have, it started out with the minimum, I think there were 3 to 5 when it started, communities that started their own arts councils. And I think now it's up to 32. So they're all over the state, and they're all working to do things in their own community. Mm-hmm. It's been a wonderful asset for the arts.
Right.
Yeah, Ruth?
But it's like with anything new, it takes people a while to figure out why it's important and what it's needed, because they hadn't had it before and they thought they were getting along okay. But I think the general population had no idea what the possibilities could be. And so it's been a learning curve for people across the state to see the importance of the arts and how that can affect a community, not only for, you know, its residents, but in many cases the tourists that come, and also for encouraging businesses to come. I mean, it's been a really huge boon, I think, to the whole state.
How do you see that the arts have changed in the state since the 1960s and the 1970s?
The advancement has just been remarkable. Like I said, when we started with the three little programs to help the symphonies, and then taking touring programs out to the people, from there it's grown. Now they have fellowships for artists. They have artists in schools where they take our professional arts, which nobody knew we had, you know. And now they had employment by going into school situations and doing residencies and promoting the arts and education. And then we had service. We also had a newsletter that was vital, which is still going. In fact, one of the great sources of information here is their Arts Alive publication that the South Dakotans for the Arts puts out with Steve and Catherine Thurman. That's going strong and has been since 1981, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ruth Brennan?
Well, I was just going to say the growth has been tremendous, and it's hard now to imagine South Dakota with all of the arts organizations and arts projects and events that are going on. But because I can remember when I first moved to Rapid City, what we had here was a community concert association, and I think that was a movement that was started a long time ago, and many communities did have that. But but beyond that, that was something that we imported and brought people in. It didn't really foster local artists and performers to do things. So that's been important. But I think, too, that with all of the things going on, all the projects and events and galleries key things that has really helped is having that funding, and without that, we would still be struggling. And it's a combination of federal funding and state funding and regional funding, as well as, you know, donations and contributions from local people in all kinds of amounts and foundations and all of that. So I look at Rapid now, and the Doll Center has been expanded to about three times its original size, to was over a $6.5 million project, I believe. The new Performing Arts Center here was a project of about that same amount of money, and that's just opened. So things it's. The growth, I think, has been tremendous, and it's not only been the people that have been working on it and all, but it's also been support by the state legislature and Congress. And at times we've come close to losing that money, so we've really had to, you know, get out and tell people what the value of the arts is to the state.
So that's one thing that hasn't changed over the years?
Well, it's tried to a few times, but we've been very successful in keeping that funding going. It varies from time to time, but it's still there.
Charlotte Carver?
Well, the thing that's amazing about the matching, it's absolutely imperative. In order to get a grant from any source of funding, the South Dakota Arts Council included, you have to have matching funds. So that means that there's community involvement in the projects that take place. It's not that you're giving them money for, it's to help. It's helping money.
Right.
And that's what it ended up being for in all of the cases, really.
Well, with Charlotte Carver, looking back over your time with the South Dakota Arts Council, and even beyond that, what do you see as your proudest accomplishments?
Oh my! I'm so proud of the Community Arts Council Network. I'm so proud of the Foundation for the Arts. It's now called the South Dakotans for the Arts, which is it's an all-membership organization, and that's growing by leaps and bounds. And that has three components. It has one in education and one in community arts networking and one in arts advocacy, which helps with the legislation and all that sort of thing that we have to do to keep our money flowing.
And not only that, but that organization is really one of a kind. It's a model for many other state organizations, statewide organizations around the country. So we're unique here. We knew that, but now other people know that as well.
Yeah.
Well, this is a fascinating conversation. We could keep it going for a long time, but I'm afraid we're running out of time here. So, Charlotte Carver, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to come to your studios since I'd planned this morning.
And Ruth Brennan, thanks so much for your time as well.
Well, my pleasure, and thank you, Carl.
And we did. We have received a comment from Daniel, who says Rapid City and the state of South Dakota certainly have been blessed by having an arts advocate in Ruth Brennan. I have known Ruth for 20 years and worked with her in arts programming, fundraising, and attended many arts openings, dance, and theatrical performances with Ruth. She is certainly a role model of mine. Ruth has traveled extensively and brings an arts worldview to Rapid City and the state. So thanks for that comment, and you're welcome to send us your comments as well. Well, we're at midday at sdpb.org, and you can also reach me on Twitter, CarlSDPB. Those interviews are in connection with a special three-part PBS documentary airing in February called Makers, Women Who Make America. And this week we're exploring local women who've made a difference. And coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with Judges Kathleen Caldwell and Patricia Ripel. That's tomorrow on Dakota Midday. Coming up after a short break, we'll discuss the latest in state politics with the Dakota political junkies, Jonathan Ellis and John Hunter, and then we'll talk with Rapid City writer Lori Armstrong about the tough, smart heroine of her latest mystery novel, Merciless. And if you're a fan of Lori Armstrong's books, give us a call. Join the conversation. Again, Twitter, CarlSDPB, or you could email us at midday@sdpb.org.